Hello, beautiful alchemist. Welcome to Reiki Radio. I am your host, Yolanda. And today we are talking to someone you will recognize if you've been listening to the podcast for some time. We are going to sit down today with Nicholas Pearson. I am so thankful that he agreed to have this conversation with me. As many of you know, we have had him on the podcast 3 times prior, at least. And I had a chance to interview him for his book, which is called Stones of the Goddess, also Foundations of Reiki Roho, and Flower Essences from the Witch's Garden was the most recent. But Nicholas is the author of 8 books in total, and all of his books are phenomenal. So if you are a crystal enthusiast, if you are a Reiki enthusiast, if you love or want to know more about flower essences, I highly, highly recommend his work. In fact, I would use his book, Reiki or Foundations of Reiki Roho, in class. So, Nicholas and I have had several discussions over the years. Last year, I even interviewed him for the Reiki Rays Global Healing Summit. But today, I asked him, would he just come have an open conversation with me? And that's why I even teased him in the interview about saying yes kind of blindly, because I wanted to have an opportunity to get to know the person behind the work. You know, he has, again, incredible, incredible books. If you haven't read any of them, you'll see what I mean, even within the first few pages. But I wanted to know just more about him and his process. And so we had this amazing conversation. You will learn more about his practice and relationship and thoughts about Reiki. We also talk about the importance, in both of our opinions, of learning more about the roots of Reiki and the foundation of what so many of us practice, but then also having the freedom to, practice in whichever way you feel called to. So this was inspired by, I heard him say one time on an Instagram live that Reiki was adaptable. So we talk quite a bit about that. But Nicholas is really someone who does beautifully bridge the gap between the scientific and the spiritual. And you will learn a lot about his points of view today, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Now, one of the things that came out from the conversation is I also recommend not only checking out Nicholas's work, you can buy his books, you can train with him. We will share some upcoming dates, which actually start this week. So if you are interested in learning from him, learning more about Reiki, taking Reiki training, learning about crystals, and even more, you want to go to his website, theluminouspearl.com, or you can also follow him on Instagram at theluminouspearl. Now, one of the things, again, we talked about, but I just want to share with you here as well. If you are someone who does have any of his books or anyone that we have spoken to here on the podcast, there are so many beautiful authors and teachers that we've had an opportunity to learn from here on the podcast. And I know many of you, like me, have also enjoyed their works, their offerings. And it means so much to these authors and really does support their work simply to have us go and write a review. So if you have any of the books from the authors, including Nicholas, it would mean the world to them and really help their books and their visibility just by going to whichever platform you may have ordered their books from and leaving a review. So I encourage you all to do that because there is so much work that goes on behind the scenes for them to provide for us all of this beautiful content to learn and grow from. So I hope that you enjoy this opening conversation with Nicholas today, and I will see you on the other side. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Reiki Radio. We are here today with one of my favorites, Nicholas Pearson. Nicholas, I want to thank you truly for coming to have this conversation, especially because I was so vague with what I wanted to talk to you about. So
It's
thank you.
absolutely my pleasure. And sometimes the mystery is where the real magic is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I was thinking about it. I actually happened to one day catch one of your IG lives, and I only heard a snippet, but something you said really struck me, and I'll ask you about it in a moment. And then I thought to myself, like, wow, I've had the opportunity to read his books, which I love, and everyone should have your books, and we'll talk about those too. But I was like, I've never really just talked to just the person, you know? Like, I've been excited about your work, as many of us are. And so we could ask you questions all day about the contents of your book. But I was like, I just want to sit down and talk to Nicholas and learn some more about him and his path, or maybe even inspiration of the books. But this is what she said. So you were talking about Reiki. Just so everyone knows, you do Q&A on Instagram. Before I get to that, can I just ask you about that? What got you to open up to do the IG lives?
This great pause that we've experienced from the start of the pandemic kind of disrupted a lot of our normal routines. And I realized that as I was making the shift to teaching online, teaching a lot of my content online, at least some of those things, I wanted to do a little bit more outreach. And I'm not a good planner all the time when it comes to how I'm going to use my office hours. I have a little bit of a, we'll say nonlinear brain when it comes to certain things. So the opportunity to be flexible and to do things spur of the moment is really useful, depending on what catches my interest and what's going to be useful. And I really miss outreach that the entirety of 2020, I didn't get to do a single book signing from the moment things started to shut down from the pandemic. And so I was missing that like face-to-face component, the meet and greet. You can do Q&A in an online class, but it's still not quite as organic as like book signings and things. So it started with an idea to give people context for my work. I think my very first live was talking about books in my library because I'm a big old nerd and I love books, and it's hard to understand the work that I do unless you also understand where it comes from and what's inspired me and how I seek to enrich the conversation along the way, whether that's crystals or Reiki or otherwise. So it started with like just nerdy book show and tell in my personal library, and then I started to use it for some specific planned topics as I got nearer to the launch of my previous book. I guess that would be Seven Flower Essences from the Witch's Garden. I started to do like a flower of the week, and I'd pick a day of the week to talk about it. But then it just started to become a little more, we're gonna say feral. Just, the day would arise, I'd get through some morning work, I'd need a break, but I still had a lot of words in my head. So I'd get them to do the live Q&A or crystal show and tell, or I'd pick a random topic to teach people about. And I love that I can meet people in that format. I love that there are free ways to share information, because like I get it, we live under capitalism, I gotta pay my bills, so does everyone else. But there's still got to be a way to give people access to what I do without it being behind a paywall. So I try to make sure I've got things that all levels of access can reach.
100%. And that's such an important thing. That was something so important to me too, because a lot of this work and the classes are very expensive. And even the books, I mean, you never know what people can have access to. So that's wonderful that you even consider that. But from your description, it sounds like basically, I just wanted to have an IG live with you today. That's exactly what I was like. I just want to see, learn more about your inspirations. So funny enough, scrolling, see you. Oh, Nicholas is doing an IG live. I click and I hear you say, yeah, I've done a lot of training and something else you were saying. And then you said, I believe Reiki is adaptable. And I was like, yeah, Nicholas, it is. So I wanted to ask you about that. And the reason is because especially the way that you write and your books. They're so, you write in a way that we can all comprehend the work, but you can tell that it's also very, you also mentioned how you bridge like the scientific with the spiritual, right? And that comes through so clearly in your work. But when I heard you say that, it kind of gave me another curiosity of, well, how does he really see all of this behind I don't know why my mind is going blank with the words, but behind the facts, right? Behind what you research and behind what you may find through study, just through your practice, what are your thoughts and what did you mean by Reiki as adaptable?
Wow. There's so much there, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm me, I'm going to start with the facts because it's going to be the doorway to this.
Right.
We know that Reiki has adapted itself and has been adapted by, intentionally or unintentionally, by the folks who present it to different communities in different places and times and in different formats and settings. And we know that Reiki works, right? We have plenty of studies, rich, data-driven, robust, statistically important studies that reveal that, you know, 30 minutes of Reiki in a clinical setting produces a measurable effect, as well as the more idealized, you know, hour long format away from the hustle and bustle of a hospital or anywhere else. Like, we see that Reiki works regardless of that external context. We also know that the form of practice, as elucidated by most people today, is not identical to what Usui himself practiced and taught in the 1920s, because, I mean, spoiler alert, none of us know exactly what he did. We try to fill in the gaps as best we can. There are groups that I think preserve historical forms of practice very, very well, but even they have to have undergone adaptation because it's been more than 100 years now. Humans change, society changes. So Reiki works regardless of our form of practice. Reiki works regardless of where we are in the world and who we are, what our identity is, the language we're speaking. So we know that it, I won't just say survives adaptation, but itself encourages, maintains, and supports all processes of change and adaptation. So when we talk about how we approach our personal practice, what we do with our personal practice, people know me as the crystal guy, maybe also as the crystal and Reiki guy. It almost always comes up when people want to know about both of these topics. So how do you combine crystals and Reiki together? And, you know, as a professional practitioner, I don't. And that's usually a very unsatisfying answer to people, right? There were times in my life, you know, I cross-pollinated a lot. But these days, I really love the depth and simplicity of Reiki. But, you know, the deal is that just because I don't doesn't mean you can't. You can be a reflexologist and adapt Reiki to fit that practice. You can be a registered nurse and adapt Reiki to fit that practice. You could be a color therapist, a crystal therapist, an aromatherapist. You could use flower essences and anything else. And Reiki will support that because, you know, Reiki itself is, on the one hand, a closed practice that we are initiated into, and we are given a lineage that we hopefully endeavor to maintain or uphold and pass on. And there are a set of ideals and things that we can kind of check off the list. This is what the practice of Reiki is. But Reiki simultaneously describes this energy, or maybe a better way to put it is this phenomenon in the universe. And a few years back, I started shifting my framework away from viewing Reiki as a discrete energy, in part because we can't measure it. It doesn't exist on the electromagnetic spectrum or on any of those other measurement tools we'd use to you know, define it as a kind of energy. And it also defies a few of the laws of physics. So energies, they diminish in amplitude, they diminish in power the farther away from the source they are. But we know from our practice, we also know from peer-reviewed studies, that Reiki works irrespective of the distance between practitioner and recipient. So it doesn't behave like an energy. It's a cosmic phenomenon instead. And when we view it as this phenomenal state rather than energetic state, something that is pervasive, something that touches every part of the cosmos. As Usui himself said, everything in the universe possesses Reiki. I'm paraphrasing, but it's there in the Kokai Denju Setsume, the explanation of open teaching, the little manual published by his organization even today. So everything possesses Reiki. Reiki is woven through anything that you can think or say or do, whether you're initiated or not, it is there. So Reiki is already touching everything. So why can't we use Reiki any way that is meaningful to us?
Yes, I love that you say that. And also, I have to say, I really admire that you highlight, even though you may choose to work with it in a very particular way, of course, everyone should go with how they may feel guided. And the truth of the matter is, I mean, even in my practice still, I'm just open to the dance with Reiki, because there was a, you know, at the beginning, I was just trying to understand and I just wanted all the information. I saw the classes that you took looking at your site and I was like, wow, it's like we did the same thing. My list is long. And just in Reiki. But then there was a point where I did just want to focus solely on, well, what is my experience with Reiki that goes beyond anything I learned in class, beyond anything at all? I wanted it to become my teacher, so to speak. And then again, it's like, it's just a dance with it. So I wanted to ask you about that, because you do have an interest in crystals and you had the book about the flower essences. So clearly you have, oh, and you're a musician, but even with the interest in the other things, to have the other practices given you deeper understanding about Reiki or vice versa.
Yeah, you know, I might, in a classroom setting, in a formal interview, maintain that I keep my practices kind of in their neat little piles. But the truth is that when we view Reiki from this lens as universal phenomenon, there's nothing else that I'm doing that doesn't also have Reiki in it, right? So even if I'm not engaging with a formal practice of laying on of hands when I'm making a crystal grid, or you know, chanting some mantras or visualizing symbols when I'm doing any other healing practice, it doesn't mean that Reiki isn't also there. And Reiki for me has become more life philosophy than just a discrete set of if-then statements, of rules that I follow, of procedures and protocols and specific interventions. It is also that, under the umbrella of Usui Reiki Ryoho, the Usui Reiki healing method,
yes.
You know, the Ryoho healing method, that whole part implies some kind of methodology or protocol. And that is a finite kind of thing. But Reiki, the expression, describes something numinous, something infinite, something limitless. And when I go out into the garden and I have an experience with a new flower that's in bloom, you know, that numinous feeling of blessing that comes from the plant spirit touches me in the same way that, you know, meditating on the Reiki principles does. When I get to know a brand new mineral specimen I brought into my collection that I hope to be able to use to support my health and well-being or those of my students and clients, you know, that feeling of light when I really, really connect to the consciousness of that stone is the same pervasive feeling as the phenomenon of Reiki. So I think ultimately, Reiki as a practice is that kind of, you know, closed set of procedures.
Yeah.
And it gets wider every day as people adapt their praxis and add new things to it. I don't mean closed to be negative or narrow, just that it is a container. And we need that container or there is no practice.
Right.
But as I engage with other practices, I start to see how enriching Reiki has been for understanding spirituality, how enriching Reiki has been for understanding myself. We have to know the material we're working on. And at the end of the day, all these things are working on me, hopefully to
right.
be a better and more well-adjusted human, at least some days, if you squint from far away. As far as how they've helped me understand Reiki, it's really the same process over and over again. I wish there's like some magic secret formula I could give people, but really it's two things. It is surrender and wonder. Those are the two things that all of these praxis give me that point me to that same magical, mystical, numinous force or phenomenon, surrender and wonder. You got to have awe, and you got to be able to give up and give in.
100%. I think that's the only, well, not the only thing, but one of the main things that keeps me in practice is just that I am always in awe. And it's funny what you say. I mean, it's like, really, we can't take Reiki, the essence, outside of anything. And one time, I say all the time, if I could only practice one thing, it would be meditation. And one time someone questioned me like, oh, so you would give up Reiki? And I'm like, well, I don't feel like I'm outside of that when I'm in meditation. You know, in fact, I feel like I'm more aware of it in that state. But the knowing and what it starts to reveal for us, I think that's what's most interesting about it. And again, I think that part of it can only come through the practice. And it's the practice without expectation, right? Because the expectation, I think, puts blinders and limitations on what we think we're supposed to experience or what we think we're supposed to do within some very rigid boundary. But it's phenomenal, I think, what starts to open up. And that has been my experience. Other practices remind me or help me see Reiki in a different way, and Reiki helps me to understand other things in different ways. But you point to the roots and the foundation, and you are in a lot of ways a traditionalist and want us to really be or have access to our understanding, awareness of at least the history of Reiki. And I wanted to know, one, why are you so curious about this? I mean that in a good way, because it's interesting to me. This is why I say there are a lot of people who research the history of Reiki. And sometimes in our humanness, we get very rigid about being right about how things were or what translates as what. And to your point, there's a lot that we may never know or fully understand. But no matter what we choose to do with the technique, understanding the roots as best we can would obviously be beneficial. So I wanted to ask you about how important that is for you, doing this research, going back to really understand the legacy, but also that consideration of what Yasui practiced that wasn't Reiki, how that poured into and shaped what we know as Reiki as a practice.
Yeah, so this is a big question for me, and it's something that's apparent in all my work, not just Reiki. I learn to look at the roots of things. And when I build this kind of context, when I do this kind of exploration, specifically in Reiki, there are a few concrete goals that I have. And I think the most important of them today for me, as a white man of relative privilege living in the 21st century in the United States, is that I'm not having the same lived experience as Usui. Right. I am not part of his kind of cultural identities. I live in the broader stream of ideas that coalesced into what we think of as Reiki. And what I mean by that is we've had this kind of Japanized idea, Japanified idea, the myth of Japanese idealism within the system of Reiki, that this is purely Japanese thing. And the excellent scholarship of Dr. Justin Stein really talks about this kind of transnational exchange and the North Pacific network. In other words, that it was ideas coming and going over again that created the platform for Reiki to be born. That includes the importation of ideas from quote unquote the West into Japan and exporting Reiki out from the East and into the West. And these are, you know, very synthetic kinds of ideas. But still, regardless of whether or not we had this exchange, here I am living over 100 years later. I can't belong to all of the groups that he did. I can't hold all the identities that he did. As an outsider, it is really important for me to appreciate the roots, to share the roots, to give us better context. Sometimes knowing why something is just as important as knowing how to do it.
Yes.
And to ensure that I'm not encroaching on the territory as best as I'm able of appropriation. I want to maintain the dialogue that has been there from the beginning, the dialogue of exchange, the idea of mutual appreciation among the inflow and outflow of ideas and practices. So that's a big one for me.
Yes.
Another reason that I really think it's important to understand the roots of a practice, the kind of foundation of it, and the context outside of it, is if we understand where something has been, it helps us understand where it's going to take us. So Reiki history is vital to me because there are a lot of conflicting ideas. There are a lot of erroneous ideas, some which are more or less harmless, but others can cause harm in this idea of appropriation. You know, if we assert that Reiki came from Atlantis or from the Pleiades, or from somewhere else, when we know the actual names of the human beings involved in the genesis and transmission of Reiki, then we are really harming the history. We're harming the historical figures or harming the practice itself.
Right.
But when we know where it's been and we can kind of see this meteoric rise that Reiki's had, if we can anticipate what's coming next based on how it has already adapted, what kinds of changes it's been through, and if we can ensure that that arc stays true to its roots, then we're going to ensure the longevity of the practice. When we see that any kind of spiritual practice, lots of different healing modalities, when they get so disconnected from their roots, there's nothing to feed them anymore, they fizzle out, they die out. Reiki exists within a continuum of healing practices, of we'll say salvific techniques, to use some more kind of academic language to describe things that emerge kind of contemporaneously with it. And a lot of them have almost ceased to exist outside of Japan. Some are still quite popular, especially those that have a little bit more of a religious framework to prop them up. Reiki does not.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen is in other parts of the world, and similar kinds of ideas are subtracted from their culture of origin, they get so watered down that they don't have the staying power. And Reiki has survived 101 years now,
yeah.
And there's no sign of it letting up. So to ensure that longevity, to ensure that we can continue to see the arc, I want to make sure that it is rooted to keep feeding it. And we can anticipate the kinds of changes to a certain degree, because there's always mystery. But we can anticipate to a certain degree these kinds of changes based on where it's been.
I love that. And it's one of the reasons that I really do love reading your work. And to your point, not just your Reiki book, but even your other books, the other topics. And I remember when I read Stones of the Goddess, I was so, I think I must have told you during that interview, it was within the first couple of pages that I wanted to highlight everything, because I was learning so much. And I think I hadn't even gotten to the first chapter yet, you know, like that's how incredible your work is. But I think, you know, to your point, it is important for us to understand where things come from. And for me personally, that was why, because I started like you with more of a non-traditional teaching, actually the same that you had looking at your site, and then also had some more traditional with, you know, some of the same teachers as you as well. And it was because I knew that if I could understand more of the history or where it came from, my thought was maybe then I could understand more of the intent of the practice. And if I understood more of the intent, then I would understand more of my own interaction with it, or perhaps what it was trying to help me to recognize or realize, because it's so much deeper than what we see on the surface to me. So I think of, for example, when we look at the Gokai, we can read it like just, okay, it sounds lovely. That's nice. But it's very different than if you really try to investigate for yourself, what is the real meaning behind these words and how are they applicable and how is it possible? And what is it asking me to actually question about who I'm being? That's very different than just these words that I memorize, right? So I love that you do the work that you do, but I have to ask, is it a little maddening sometimes? Because I mean, especially with you researching something that was already kind of elusive in some ways, and the further we get away from it, I imagine it's harder to even get, you know, these nuggets of truth or information that really you may feel is reliable. Can that be frustrating? And how much work does this take?
Let's be really transparent for a moment. Let's talk growth.
Yeah.
So, I have softened a lot in some ways in the past several years. I think it's helpful to note that I wasn't really raised in a religious household. I wasn't raised with any dogma at all.
Yeah.
Other families did church on weekends. We did the library. So, you know, it was a very different kind of experience. So I wasn't necessarily brought up with this idea of the one right, true, and only way.
Right.
But you get exposed to those kinds of ideas in different Reiki communities or other communities. Yeah. We use Reiki as the litmus test here. And I definitely have reached points in my Reiki journey where reading the myths and misinformation, sometimes in sources people don't realize are not entirely factual, is absolutely frustrating.
Yeah.
And I've just come to realize that Reiki is a multivalent thing. It holds different meanings and values and interpretations to different people.
Yes.
In different praxes at different times. And it is definitely a case of barring concrete historical data, outside of that, more than one thing can be true at a time.
Right.
So like we know a good amount of detail on the life stories of Usui, the founder of Hayashi Sensei, of Takada Sensei, of you know, all these other historical figures. You know, there are things that are up for debate, there are things that aren't. But, you know, outside of these kinds of dates and names and times and that kind of data, what we experience as Reiki will always be deeply personal and completely transpersonal, impersonal at the same time. So we are gonna run into those experiences where people are writing about or teaching or transmitting their personal gnosis, their mm-hmm. personal experience, the wisdom that has come to them through their practice. And if their context isn't the same as Takada's context between the 30s and 1980, or Usui's context in the 1920s, how they frame those ideas and experiences is going to sound different.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why it is pretty standard in a lot of Reiki communities around the world, not just in the West, but around the world, to use the chakras as a model, to use the subtle bodies as a model, to use all these other things that certainly were not endemic to Japan when Usui was transmitting the early stages of the system of Reiki. Does that mean these people are wrong for incorporating them? No, it's just their roadmap.
Right.
And different roadmaps are going to, hopefully, if they're effective, if they're drawn well, they're going to take us to the same place. But it's like when we look at maps of the Earth, you know, you've got your Mercator projection and you've got the round globes. They all have distortions in them, and yet they all represent the same territories.
Right.
So the model, the metaphor, the map that we use to make sense of Reiki and to make sense of the experiences we have from the practice of Reiki, they're going to be filled with the same kinds of distortions and the same kinds of, we'll say, stepping of things down in terms that are understandable to us. And that's just kind of what comes with the ineffable, numinous nature of this cosmic phenomenon. We have to dumb it down because we're humans.
Yeah.
We aren't from that big cosmic perspective. So these days, I have an exercise that I use. It's a very simple one, but it's my little intellectual exercise to ensure that I don't step into that place of frustration.
Yeah.
I'm human. It's going to happen. But you know, the big thing that I do is that I try to celebrate every open door to Reiki.
Mm.
Wow. I am so glad that this teaching exists for people who are drawn to it to come into the practice of Reiki, because objectively, if they engage with the practice in a way that's meaningful to them, good things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And that excites me. And the more people who find their way into Reiki, the better. Now, do I wish we had equal access universally to the same historical data? Yes. Do I wish we had equal understanding and appreciation for that multinational convergence of ideas in 1920s Japan? You bet. But we don't. And we probably never will, because there's no governing body that regulates all things Reiki.
Yeah.
And there will always be people who say, well, my Reiki is the real Reiki, and
right.
yours isn't. And so on and so forth, because that's a human thing. That's actually got nothing to do with Reiki and everything to do with being human. So we're not going to be able to subtract the humanness from our Reiki practice, because humans are practicing it. So being frustrated about those things is an exercise in futility. And, you know, there's a reason in the Gokai. It kind of leads with, just for today, don't be angry.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's a perfect point. And it's funny because, well, that's why I was even curious about it, because of, obviously, as you dance around within the community, you do find, I mean, not only are there a lot of different translations, ideas, beliefs, all with under the same umbrella of Reiki and within the Reiki community, but there are some who do absolutely fall into like the absolutes, and this is absolutely right, this is absolutely wrong, or this one is better than that one, whatever. And I also came to the conclusion of like, well, I mean, listen, everything is going to attract people differently. There are just, you know, like rainbow Reiki. I don't know if that exists, but I'm just saying, like, if that in of itself calls to someone and it brings them into, you know, techniques, practices, awareness, that just opens up their path for them as an individual, high five up top. Yeah. However, I do really appreciate that there are people like you that even have the patience to do this research. And part of the reason why too is because the stories keep changing, like, because you keep finding new information. I don't think it's the fault of the researchers. And I want to point that out too, because a lot of people get very upset with like, oh, so-and-so said something in a book 20 years ago, and that's not true. Well, we probably didn't have access to what researchers have found 20 years later. So with that, does it feel like a ever chasing, because new things may be being discovered as we keep going? And with that, even with your first book, are there things that you've found out since that maybe now you're like, got to make a little tweak to that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I want to give credit where credit is due to the folks who are doing more primary research than I have access to. I have to, you know, recognize that a lot of what I do consists of looking at other folks' primary resources
or
even secondary resources and distilling that further, looking for the commonalities. I'm a big pattern finder. You know, if people ask me, what is my special skill set? One, I got a really good memory. And two, I'm really good at patterns.
Yeah.
So I rely on the folks who are doing the even harder work of, you know, discovering publications and translating them and doing all kinds of stuff. Have I done a little bit of that? Sure. But it doesn't even begin to approach the scholarship of some of these other folks. And I live in Central Florida, which is a long way away from Tokyo or Kyoto or anywhere else that might have been close to an important point in Reiki history, geographically speaking, as well
yes.
as in time. So, I'm really thankful that people continue to do the really hard, detail-oriented work, that are faced with rejections day in and day out, that there are people going through archives and slowly sharing and compiling. And stories change. A great example, we can use someone who's very public about this. Frank Arjavapeter talks about, the initial translation of the Usui Memorial Stone that he did in the 90s for his first book, Reiki Fire, which I somehow just realized I've lost my copy of and just bought a new one today. because I enjoy looking at how ideas and language changes over time. So I'm gonna revisit that because it's been a while.
Yeah.
And he's very public about, so we translated this thing this way. It wasn't right. So my other books translate it this way, or, we don't say today that the precepts come from the Meiji Emperor, even though that's maybe what I put in that translated work in the 1990s, because we know better. We get the context of it better. The data is presented better. And this is true for my work as well. My Reiki book came out in 2018, and in 2019, I was really blessed to take like a 4-day intensive training with Inamoto Hyakuten. So Hyakuten Sensei is the founder of Komyo Reiki Do, and he has done a lot of interlineage, school outreach and research, and knows, plenty of folks in Japan and abroad, and has his own ideas, some of which, of course, I wouldn't share outside of the context of that training. But he shared a couple of things that I'm like, oh, I would love to go back and fix this. And this would be so great to amend. And a couple of other important works that have come out in the last couple of years are also going to revise what we think and know about Reiki. A great example is a book by Amanda Jane and Silke Claim on
Oh,
Women
yes.
in Reiki.
Great book.
Brilliant. It is currently my favorite book on Reiki. I wrote
I
a book.
love that book. Yeah.
My book is not my favorite. Theirs is. it tells such important stories, and there's nuance. There's stuff that we didn't get from other resources.
Right.
We've got Justin Sein's brand new book, Alternate Currents, which I think officially comes out tomorrow or the day after. But I just got my copy from his publisher. And, there's stuff in there that surely is going to change the way I've presented data. I think a really important but also seemingly insignificant thing that the Reiki community was alerted to a few years ago is that Takada trained more than 22 Reiki masters. And so, the best language we can use today is the 23 or more masters by Takada, because we may find more information. That list of 22 was compiled by her daughter, Alice Takada Furumoto, after Takada's passing, based on financial documents, like who paid what, when, where, and why. And we found some evidence that there were folks that she offered training to that might have declined way earlier than that window in the 1970s, when she really kind of with fervor began to transmit the third degree and initiate more teachers, or train and or initiate more teachers, I should be careful to say. So it's always going to change. I would love to put out a revised edition if I could ever convince my publisher that it is a financially viable thing for them to do. I would happily put out a second edition of my Reiki book. Even if I never get that opportunity, I've got more books in me, and
yes,
I'll happily issue retractions with each one as needed.
I'm so glad we're talking about this, Nicholas, because I think it's a good spotlight. It brings to all of our awareness how much work goes into these books that, we all order, we read, and we love. And even in the back of the book, where we can see all of, the references that you may have pulled from and all of these things, I just, even listening to you now, even have a deeper appreciation for the work that you do to not only find what is most true with what we know now, But to extract and go so deep into that exploration, I mean, there's a lot of work on top of then you actually writing the book. So I hope everyone listening really gets that, because, you know, I was thinking about this driving this morning too. As I tell everyone about your books, everyone. And I said, I have a sticky note that I have to absolutely, at the very least that I can do, is make sure I've written reviews on all of the books that I've read of yours. And I think that's important for all of us to have an awareness of as well. Like, as part of the Reiki community, as part of people who are just seekers and thankful for the information that is available to us, I think a lot of times we don't think of the little ways that we can say thank you to the authors, to the researchers, to the content creators, because it's so much more work than we realize. So if you have any of Nicholas's books, Nicholas or anyone, you know, whose books you love, rate their books, write a review, share those things. It only helps. And I really appreciate your work.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I don't know a single author who doesn't love hearing from a reader. Hey, yeah. I appreciated this book, or, you know, this thing you said, this mattered so much to me, or even just a simple thank you. Like, most of the authors I know, at least of my generation, you know, we've grown up with a particular set of problems that the world has kind of just dumped out in front of us. And yeah. I think we're all as well adjusted as we're ever going to be, thanks to our spiritual praxis. But in a world that is chaotic and not super gentle on sensitive folks, just hearing the slightest bit of positive feedback is going to make someone's day. And it's yes. not just for authors. I mean, we as human beings thrive on connection. And one of the easiest ways to reinforce positive connection is through stuff like gratitude.
Yes.
It's amazing. And writing a book, even if I subtracted all my personal experience from anything I've ever written about and only just reported the data, it is still a really vulnerable process. It is still really personal, because you cannot help but write from the perspective of your own personal experience, your own personal bias. Yeah. Yes, my books are biased, as are every other, any other book that's out there. Like, it can't be helped, because we are humans. So there is always this element of vulnerability in writing, in publishing, in editing. Oh goodness, my editor has seen quite a number of my quirks over the years. And I think it's a blessing, because it reminds us that this is a human-driven, human-centered process. And I just really love knowing that my books are out there contributing in meaningful ways, whether it's big or little, it doesn't matter. So if anyone wants to leave a review, that's great. The algorithms love that. I would love to be able to pay my bills from royalties one day.
Yeah.
So those are great and meaningful things, but also just knowing on the human level that this supports other humans.
Yes.
That's really where the magic is.
Yeah. I mean, 1,000%. You made me think of the other day. I got a message from someone, and I always respond, you know, to messages, but this woman, she was just saying that she enjoyed a recent podcast or whatever. And I responded, and she responded back like, "Oh my God, thank you so much for responding." I'm like, "What? Thank you so much for letting me know you're enjoying the podcast." Like, yeah, I mean, it does mean a lot. But also, again, I just hope everyone really recognizes there's so much that goes into these tools that help all of us to go deeper into our practice. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that too. Can we just point out for a second, just side note, if anyone is new to your work or are unaware, you have 8 books out right now, right?
That sounds right.
Yes. So, well, I looked up and I was like, I don't know if there's some I don't know about, but you have six books on crystals. Okay, so any crystal lovers, if you have crystal curiosity, this is the guy. You believe me, just believe me. But 6 crystal books. You have the Foundations of Reiki Rojo book, and potentially we may get some more Reiki books in the future. And then you have the Flower Essences book, which is also more recent as well. That's incredible. I mean, even when I see your updates of like when you're almost done with a book and you're going to submit, Like, I feel like doing jumping jacks for you. I'm like, oh my God. But it's so impressive. Like, where does he find the time? But really appreciate your work again. Want to ask you though, in your personal work, how important is that blend for you of practice and study? Because, you know, we could get stuck in one or the other, really.
Yeah, this is huge. We're going to be vulnerable here for a moment. For many years, I have battled with imposter syndrome because the act of writing a book and the act of putting a book into the world, believe it or not, writing the book is the easiest part of the process. No matter how long it takes, I just submitted a book that I've been working on and off for 4 years. That's a really long time. Now I've written other things have come out since then. But you know, imagine 4 years of labor into this. That was still the easiest part of what this process is going to look like. So we forget it's not just writing a book. It's
right.
so much more. But I have struggled with imposter syndrome because the act of doing this, the act of being on this side of the page, so to speak, when you know, working with the written word, is going to require a certain amount of not practicing, because you have to step away from the practice to do it. Do you want to generate context for it? So you do research, or you interview people, or you do whatever it is that you're going to do. And again, you have to step away from the practice time to do that. And if you do this often enough, you start to feel like you write about your practice more than you engage with your practice. And so I've had to reach out to people that I really respect, that I really love, to be like, hey, am I a fraud? Because I think I spend more time at the computer than I do at the Reiki table.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's just kind of how it goes. And I think the most reassuring thing I ever heard from someone in a similar position to me is he said, you know, it's at best, it's a 50-50 mix, you know, 50% armchair academic, 50% practice. So, you know, if you go from only practice and you're reducing that by half, you suddenly feel like you've lost a significant portion of it. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm a fraud. I'm not really practicing what I'm preaching. But the beautiful thing about Reiki is that when am I not engaging with Reiki? Because Reiki is in everything in the cosmos. So it's that pause that I have, that deep breath that I've got with closed eyes as I center myself before I put my fingertips to the keys on the keyboard. It is the lighting of the candle or the incense to set the ambiance. It's the bookends of my day where I reflect on the ideals, the Gokai. So that way, I hopefully, everything that I do between those moments is informed by them as best as humanly possible, which is better some days than others. So I think the challenge is recognizing that what you are doing is your spiritual practice. And the big shift, like the big light bulb moment for me on that, was several books ago when I was writing Stones of the Goddess. That was my fifth book. We had to count again. And I'd grown to be very wary of the editorial process in particular. I have a brilliant project editor who has overseen all my books so far, and we work really well together, and she gives me great feedback, and I trust her and she trusts me, or at least she makes it feel like she trusts me.
Yeah, yeah.
But by this process, by this point in my writing career, when it was time to start the editorial process again, and I was starting to feel icky about it, a dear friend of mine, Dan Lupacino, said to me, why don't you just make that devotional work? You're writing a book about the goddess, Nicholas. It's labor. It's intellectual, emotional, and to a certain point, physical labor to do this, whether it's the writing, the editing, the promoting. Devote that labor. Devote that effort. Give that as an offering. And it was like being blindsided by the most obvious thing in the world, like, well, duh, this is what I would say to someone else. Why didn't this ever occur to me? Like, never in a million years would I have thought that that was an effective devotion.
Yes.
And thank you, Dan, for that beautiful and timely reminder. And ever since, you know, I've always kind of dedicated that labor, that effort to the practice, whatever that practice might be. So, if I'm writing a book on Reiki, hopefully the next one that comes out into the world, all that effort, all that labor will have been devoted to the spirit of Reiki, to the essence of community in the Reiki world, and so on and so forth. So I think we can start to realize that the essence of our practice is far more important than just what we do on the meditation cushion, or
yes,
in front of the altar, or in the Reiki circle. It's what we do when we wake up from the time we go to bed, just like in the Gokai, in the original Japanese, there is a line we get, the double title, the fancy poetic description of the Gokai, the five precepts themselves, and there's some instructions at the end. And Usui reminds us, Asayu ga shoshite, morning and evening, put your palms together. Kokoro ni nenji, hold these ideas in your heart mind, kuchi ni tonayo, and chant them aloud. And there is an ahistoric, meaning not accurate, a revisionist reinterpretation of this that I actually really like. I can recognize that it might not have been the intention, but it is meaningful. And so I often share this in classes. A gentleman by the name of Dave King wrote a book with a totally revised version of Reiki history, which was quite popular for a good while until we got better data. But he says, instead of reading that line as Asayu ga shoshite, morning and evening, dugasho, we could instead read it as a compound word. Asayu together, instead of two separate words, becomes cho seiki ga shoshite kokoro ni nenji kuchi ni tonayo, which is like from morning to evening. Your whole life is as if you are in gasho. Your whole life is as if you are holding these in your heart mind or chanting them aloud. And reading that reminds me of, and I will butcher this quote terribly. It reminds me of a teaching that comes from Saint Francis of Assisi, who said something along the lines of, go into the world and preach the gospel, but only if necessary, use words.
Yes, that is one of my favorite quotes. That's on my whole face. Just that I remember when I heard it, it's one of those things that has stuck with me. And really, that was the quote. That thing was what pointed me to what our practice really is and what it's really about. I'm so glad you said that quote. But I have to say, it's interesting with everything you just said right now. It also reminds me of, there was a point in my practice that I started to really recognize, and even I try to be very intentional about when I'm speaking about Reiki, making sure to recognize the essence itself as a part. And then the technique that we call, or the system of Reiki and the techniques that fall within that, as something else, even though, you know what I mean? Reiki is not separate from this, but making sure that that's also always very clear, because I think that also helps us to recognize it's not just when you're in a session, or it's not just when you're laying your hands, that you're within the practice or within the essence and all of those things. I wanted to ask you, just because of what you said as well, or not ask you, I wanted to acknowledge our Java sensei, a teacher that we share, because you mentioned him and it makes me think of, he was the teacher that really made me curious about the history of Reiki. And he is such a storyteller. I mean, I think he could sit and talk about the history and his experiences in Japan all day, but he's really the one that made me recognize and have an appreciation for even wanting to understand more of the roots and foundation, but then also for me and just my personality, I have to allow myself the freedom to see what it is I experience and how I translate that. Because even going back to something you said earlier, I also wasn't raised, my mom didn't put any religious boundary on me, I'll say. She just said, figure it out, be a good person, have fun exploring. So I did study and questioned everything. And within that, I've always been someone who appreciates what people may say and what I can learn from other people, But I always feel like it's very important for us as individuals to see what then washes out as true for us and what it is that we can apply to see how we understand the interpretation. Because to your point, we're all very human. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you said that. Oh my gosh. Speaking of what we can learn and practice, you have a lot coming up. Thank goodness. So on top of taking the time to research, write all of these books, you do have a lot of offerings for all of us to continue to learn. So I wanted to talk a bit about that because you have some things coming up literally this week. So one is a Shimpenden class, which is Reiki Master, Reiki 3, Reiki Teacher, Shimpenden level. It's October 7th through 9th in Massachusetts. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what part of Massachusetts, and is enrollment still open if anyone's interested?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So after many requests and not doing a whole lot of travel for a few years, I slowly rolled out Reiki training again. And this is going to be my first time doing a formal third degree class in this will be, you know, the first real classroom setting. So I'm currently rewriting a new manual for it and some other supplemental materials. And I'm so excited to finally have this opportunity. So enrollment is still currently open. You could probably enroll all the way up to the morning of, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in Methuen, Massachusetts, in a venue called Circles of Wisdom. One of my favorite places to teach. They're just a great group of people. And, you know, the formal requirements on paper are maybe a little soft. Please have studied at least the second degree from any lineage.
Yeah.
And hopefully you are proficient in those techniques. I know sometimes we study those things so long ago. There'll be a refresher of first and second degree core concepts in this. So we're going to make sure that we have a kind of common language to build upon from there. And it's 3 days of training. It'll be Saturday, Sunday, and Monday because it's a holiday weekend. So we thought that was the best use of people's time. And I'm just so thankful to have this opportunity. As soon as we're done chatting, I'm going to go back to work on the supplement skills for it. And it'll be my last Reiki trip of this year, but the goal is to return to the Northeast every spring and every fall, you know, more or less often, depending on how time enables, and to squeeze in some more venues and other places to visit in between those.
Yeah.
For anyone else who's interested in spending some time in the Reiki space with me, I do an online Reiki share each month, and you get to pick your price. So it is free to attend. If you want to donate to help me cover the cost of the platforms, and if there's surplus, it'll go to charity wherever possible. You can do that. So I've got one of those scheduled for October, and I'll announce more dates through the end of the year. And then
is that the online Reiki share? October 17th.
Oh, you got it. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
you're more on it than I am. And then I also offer a variety of classes online mostly, but also occasionally in person. And one of my most regular venues is with the College of Psychic Studies, who are headquartered in London. But thanks to, you know, a virtual classroom, we can join from anywhere in the world. And I've got a couple more classes with them this year, one of which in October is going to be Crystals for Ancestral Healing on October 28th. And then I've got a two-part masterclass session with them on angelic crystals, talismanic gems, and the magic of the angels, which is going to borrow from, let's not even say borrow, it is informed by a lot of different traditions,
yes.
Some quite old, some quite modern, and some that will be in between. So there'll be something in here for anybody's practice who's interested in that topic, at least. So there'll be more stuff. I'll announce a few other dates for events that are exclusive to my Patreon folks. And I've got a conference presentation that I'm doing called Aqueous Alchemy, the Magic and Medicine of Crystal and Gem Elixirs, for an online event called Bewitching the Waters that a dear friend and colleague, Anwen Avalon, is hosting. It's going to be, I think, a really nice kind of tapering off of events this year after traveling so much earlier in the year. I'm looking forward to some quiet time this winter.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, good luck. I mean, if quiet to you is researching, I doubt that like quiet will really be quiet for you, but okay. No, but that's amazing. And I have to tell you, I was telling you before we started that I went to your website just out of curiosity. Again, it's beautiful. So for everyone listening, all of these beautiful events. Also, the day before the Reiki class, you have a live crystal grids class at that same place in Massachusetts. So if you would love to work with Nicholas in person, there are many ways, or connect with him online. I'm hoping to make the Angelic Crystals and Magic of the Angels class, which is November 29th. But you can find about his work, his books, his classes. You are really putting it in. I really appreciate it. Oh, really, truly. I mean, again, because it's a lot of work. And I think sometimes, again, we may look at what people are doing and not consider how much work goes on behind the scenes, even to create what you are presenting to us. And also consideration of you're married now. You also have your own practice, you know, and so that's a lot of dedication. And I just want to tell you, you know, really, really appreciate you. So everyone go to theluminouspearl.com, or you can also follow Nicholas on Instagram at theluminouspearl. Also catch his IG lives. They're very informative and he answers all of the questions. Gosh, there is so much. We'll have to have you back because I had many questions for you, but I'm so glad we had this conversation. Really, really glad. For all that came up and what came through, especially because, again, I think it was brave of you to just be like, okay, I'll come talk to you. So thank you, Nicholas.
It is my pleasure, Yolanda. Thank you so much for sharing some time and space. And I would just like to, if it's okay, acknowledge that our mutual friend, Raven Keys, introduced us.
Yes.
She passed away earlier this year, and this chance to connect with you is just a huge reminder of the blessings she brought to me personally, but to the world at large. So thank you, Raven, because we got to have this great conversation because of that. So
thank you. Oh, you made my eyes well up. I'm so glad you bring that up, because I forgot. That is exactly right. The first time I interviewed her, as soon as the interview was over, she was like, "You have got to meet Nicholas Pearson." I said, "Okay." And she just raved about you. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, "I'll keep in touch," or, you know, make a connection or whatever. And it was immediate with her. And yeah, she was such an amazing, I mean, she really was like a living fairy. she really was. But yeah, so thankful to her and thankful for this connection and thankful for community. I mean, because I think, at the end of the day, no matter what our practice, our lineage, our this or that, all of us are really brought in into this desire, this need for connection and community. And thank goodness within this, we get to grow and hopefully figure some things out.
Yeah. Absolutely. None of us are in this alone.
No, not at all. So everyone, be sure to use the links below, connect with Nicholas, and we will see you next time. Bye for now. Okay, beautiful alchemist. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Nicholas. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I've been wanting to have a conversation like that with him for a few years now. And I definitely want to have him back because there were more questions that I had for him that we didn't get to today. So don't forget, if you want to know more about Nicholas and his work, go to theluminouspearl.com or go to his Instagram at theluminouspearl. Also, just as a reminder for you, he has upcoming events in Massachusetts this weekend. He has a crystal grids class that will be in person, and he's also hosting a Shippenden class, which is Reiki master level class, October 7th through the 9th, also in Massachusetts. You can register for that through his website. He also has a patron where you can join him for some practices and discussions. He has online Reiki shares. One is coming up on October 17th. Mark your calendar. That takes place at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. He also has two other classes upcoming, Crystals for Ancestral Healing, which is online. That is October 28th. And then Angelic Crystals and Magic of Angels on November 29th. So much that you can show up for and learn more through Nicholas. I thank you all so much for being here. And as I mentioned in the podcast, I am very appreciative of those of you who do email me, reach out, and let me know like what you're learning through the shows, and just that the podcast is supporting your journey in any way. It is a huge honor for me to be able to host in this way and have these conversations that help all of us grow on these beautiful paths. And if you do enjoy the podcast, just the same as with the authors, I appreciate it too. If you rate the podcast, leave a review wherever you are listening from, it helps in ways that you can't even imagine. So we all of the content creators, no matter the medium, we appreciate you doing that. It's such a beautiful gesture. And I hope that you all have a gorgeous day. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. You can learn more about my work at theenergeticalchemist.com. And I will see you next week. Remember to always journey in love.